Welcome back, everyone. This is Inside the Diamonds podcast. This is episode 9. I'm your host, JC, and I'm joined again tonight with CJ. How you doing, CJ?
Aside from this cold that I have, I am fantastic.
Cold or allergies?
I don't know. That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Is it that kind of cold?
No, it actually kicked on more so last night, and it's just kicked my ass today. Sniffles, that's all it is.
Just sniffles. Yeah, I wouldn't let anyone else know that. Just the sniffles. Don't be an Austin Matthews. Play the game.
I'm here ready to work.
Did you, by chance, not to talk hockey, but did you see any of the reels of the Toronto coach quitting made with, you know, the different memes and reels where it's not really his voice, but him? Oh, there's some good ones out there right now.
I had
nothing better than seeing the Maple Leafs fans kind of fold under the pressure and throw a fit. They should know better by now in a game 7 against the Bruins what's going to happen. So let's get right into baseball. Forget all this hockey talk. That's for somebody else to do. What did you think? What was some of your takeaways from this past week? What was, I guess, the biggest takeaway from this past week of baseball?
So we talked about this a couple weeks ago. It might have been last week with the Aaron Boone getting tossed when it was the fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we just start with, I'm tired of the ump show. Like, let's get back to baseball here. I didn't like, I forget what day it was the other day. And there's a clip. It went viral of Byron Buxton. I think he had a bad slide. He just tweaked something. I think he's played all week. I don't think he's on the injured list or anything.
No, but he's on the injured list now.
Oh, he is? So he was actually badly hurt. There's the video of him jogging off the field, and the umpire clearly saying to him, let's speed this up. What are we doing? The guy's hurt. He's trying to get off the field. And you can kind of see Buxton like took a second. It looks like he actually almost tried to go into a slight jog. And then kind of just stopped and was like, nope, can't do that. And he wasn't moving that slow. He was getting off the field. He was just hurt. The other one was I'm sure you saw it, the Mets-Cubs game. They had home plate, which, not for nothing, everybody can have their opinion on this. I think he was blocking the plate. I mean, you can't stand on home plate. But it is what it is. It was the call. I didn't like the whole – so they reviewed it. They said it wasn't blocking the plate, and they said that he was out. So nothing got overturned in any way, shape, or form. The call was stood. What I didn't like was you could hear the hot mics. I shouldn't say I didn't like – I love the hot mics. I didn't like the umpire saying, if you have a problem with it, take it up with the office. Like, what are we
– Yeah, it was pretty bad.
To a show. And on top of that, Judge getting tossed the other day for the first time in his career.
Yeah.
It's just.
So you bring up an interesting point because we've talked about robo umps. You mentioned how the minor leagues are kind of using this as a system to check. Do you feel of any, like, or do you think there's any pressure on these umps where they feel as if almost they know their time is up? And they're trying to make their impact now? Or is it just they're sick and tired of the bullshit and being second-guessed all the time in regards to different things and hearing it all the time that they're between that and being pressured to speed up the game that, just like the players, they're seeing a pressure from their bosses in regards to doing their job and kind of getting things in line because it's all about the speed of the game, how quick we can turn this over, you know, get the fans in and get them out. Like, there's got to be some element of pressure that they're feeling, not by just calling balls and strikes and outs and in fair balls and foul, but they've got to be feeling the pressure of, you know, some of these guys, not saying that Buxton is one, but some of these guys are at a beat of their own drummer and they don't give a shit on the field. They're going to hustle on and off, or they're just going to take their sweet ass time. And some of these guys under their pressure, and some of them have pretty damn big egos too, it's just, I don't know what's going on, but it hasn't been a good look in the past 2 weeks, especially for the umps. And again, nowadays with cell phones, the hot mics and everything, and what they're doing with replay, it's pretty tough to get away with anything. The old days of reading lips and determining what the umps and coaches and players are saying to each other is just about over, because it's right there front and center for everyone now with all the technology.
Yep. I mean, it's going to be interesting to watch over a couple weeks, because I don't know if it gets better or if it gets worse. I mean, I don't know. And it's all, I think all these umps are starting to get egos. I think I agree with you. I think they're feeling the pressure of the robo umps, and I think they're feeling pressure of their bosses, and that's affecting things. But it's just, it's not a good look to tell a player who's hurt to hurry up and get off the field.
Yeah. You know, it'd be interesting, and this is probably a stat that somewhere is found, but it would be interesting to see for the number of games, the ratio of in the minor leagues, people getting tossed versus the major leagues.
Yeah.
Especially now with a robo ump, you know, because what are the player going to do? It the ump may have called it a ball. The other team deems it was a strike, and they go to the computer. You know, it's not the ump's fault. He got it right the first time.
That is true. That is something that, if there was a way to find it.
I'll have to take a look, not now, but down the road to see what it all looks like, because it's just, I don't know. They're trying to speed up the game. They're trying to do everything else. These refs have got to be feeling some sort of pressure about it. It's just, it's very interesting to me of how it's looking, but this past week was pathetic.
Yeah.
Out and just not a good look regardless. So it'll be interesting. Yep.
All right, I don't want to cut you off. It's definitely
no go for it.
I don't think if people want to hear us talk about the umps. I mean, no. Everybody knows they're bad. And also, like, if we're gonna start being able to overturn things after 7 days or whatever, can we go back, you know, whatever amount of time and get Galarraga his perfect game back? That's the other thing that I don't like. I mean, and I will always respect, I think it was Jim Joyce was the ump, and he
in tears
he got it wrong, and the next day in tears during the lineup exchange when Galarraga came out for that. I mean, that's how it should be. You know, he admitted he got it wrong. You know, he admitted everything. He felt terrible about it. Let's overturn that. I don't know if we can create one, but let's get a poll, and I want to see if there's a way I can do it and throw it up on social media and see who agrees that he should have his perfect game given to him and see who disagrees. Because I think if you disagree, I want to hear why. I want to hear the reason why, because I think he deserves to have it overturned and have his perfect game on the record.
Yeah, that's too bad to see it done that. I saw that one, and I saw Schilling when the kid bunted. There's some things I think at another time when we can talk about the rules of baseball and different things, but that Galarraga one is an ump related and definitely should be overturned, in my opinion.
For sure. So let's talk about these red hot Baltimore Orioles, huh?
Yeah.
6-1 last week. And that was taking 3 or 4 from the Yankees, and then they swept the Reds over the weekend. And when I was looking into it, I was like, huh, I wonder what they put up for runs and everything. They outscored their opponents 29-8 in those 7 games.
Yep.
And that's, I mean, think about it. They just lost Grace Rodriguez. He's on the injured list. They got John Means back in his first start, 7 innings, no runs, 3 hits, no walks, and 8 Ks.
Yep.
You're adding that to a rotation that, when healthy, I don't know who's the odd man out. You got Burns, who's a Cy Young candidate. You're not taking him out, especially with what he gave up to get him. Kyle Bradish is back. Cole Irvin's the guy out, but John Means, Kramer, and Grayson Rodriguez, I really have a tough time even taking Cole Irvin out, but that rotation is stacked.
Irvin pitched tremendous the other night, and it was him versus Hunter Green. And the biggest difference in that game, and the biggest difference I see in the Orioles, is they don't give you multiple outs. This was the stat I heard the other night, and it may have changed since. I don't think they have more than 9 double plays turned against them this year.
I didn't hear that stat, but that is interesting if it's true.
That was it during the Reds game. Like I believe it was during the Reds game, or maybe it was the Cubs Brewers game. But like they worked Hunter Green to 98 pitches, I think, through five. So they're working the counts. They're getting, and they've just got, and the biggest thing when I heard that it was about the double play is that the athletes that they have on that team, they all can run. They all can run. They all can move. And if you're not able to be having a ground ball pitcher come in when someone gets a single or walks and then turn over that double play, you're just extending the inning. The pitcher does his job, but if you can run and beat it out, they're a very dangerous team. And like you said, with the injuries they have in their rotation, getting Means back, which not a lot of people, I think you and I personally offline talked about it, but their team that, they took it to the Yankees again. They took it to the Reds. And one piece here, one piece there. And this team is going to be tough to beat. Again, not just this year, but like you said, for many years to come.
I don't even know if they need another piece. Unless you're going to move one of those arms to get a number two solid arm. But Rodriguez has looked like a two. Means is pitching like a three. And Kramer and Bradish can run out the rest of the rotation. I don't think
And you still have Irwin to spot start when needed.
Right. And I was looking at some numbers, and we talked about Jackson Holliday, I think, in our preview podcast.
Yeah.
We'll get to him later and what's going on with him. But nobody talked about Colton Cowser and what a start for his career. 276 average, a 929 OPS, 6 home runs, 19 RBIs, 13 runs scored, 3 stolen bases, and he's the betting favorite right now on DraftKings to be the rookie of the year.
Yeah. I remember opening day at Fenway. We were both there and just being impressed with him. You know, Gunnar Henderson I was impressed with, but him especially. He is a top prospect, a guy that was talked about heavily, but due to the amount of talent they have, he's overshadowed.
Yep.
But his stats speak for themselves.
I don't think he will be much longer.
No.
I mean, I remember he was a thorn. All three games in that Red Sox series, he was a thorn on their side. And I love seeing it. The other good name I liked, and you just said it, Gunnar Henderson might be the MVP. Yeah. I mean, what he's doing is fantastic. He's 274, 914 OPS, 10 home runs, 24 RBIs, 26 runs scored, 6 stolen bases, and he hasn't been caught stealing yet.
No.
And he's right behind Juan Soto for the betting favorite to be the MVP. I mean, is it unrealistic that these Orioles are, you know, they started off slow. Have they figured it out and they're ready to roll? And they are proven they might be the best team in baseball, especially after the weekend series with the Dodgers and the Braves, which I'll get to. That's on my list, I think, later on.
Yeah.
Actually, it's actually next, so I might as well just transition into it unless you want to add more on the Orioles.
No, I just think they're an impressive team, and what you're about to speak about is what I'm really looking forward to.
So I had said last week that was one of my – I think that was my main series that I was excited for the weekend.
Yeah.
And the Braves just didn't show up. I mean, Glasnow is dominant. If he can stay healthy, and there's something I'll mention about this series, but if he can stay healthy, that pitching staff is very good. And he got the start on Saturday. I think the final score is 11-2 in that game. He went 7 innings, gave up 5 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, and 10 Ks. I mean, he faced Elder. And so, I mean, I'm not big on Bryce Elder. I'd rather have seen Smith Shawver get a chance or something like that. But the other one was yesterday, which we thought was going to be Sunday Night Baseball, but it was the 4-10 start. And I thought for sure the Braves would not get swept when I saw the pitching matchup for that game. But
Freed,
you know, what was it? Last week we were watching the game and we mentioned he had a complete game and he looked dominant.
Yeah.
Not this week against that Dodgers lineup. 7 innings pitched, 4 hits, 4 earned runs, 3 walks, 7 Ks.
Yeah.
Paxton went 6 2/3, gave up 5 hits, 1 earned run, 2 walks, 3 Ks. So outpitched by James Paxton. And
how bad is that? That outing's not horrible for Max. No. It's just not when you compare it to what he did the week before.
Yeah, I mean, the 4 earned runs is tough, but it's the Dodgers lineup. And
exactly.
4 earned runs is not bad. The other thing, I was listening to something today, and it made me think while I was looking up this series. and there's a conversation going around on Twitter and social media with Shohei Ohtani and what he's doing to start this year.
Yeah.
And how he's hot in his numbers. I didn't write his numbers down because I heard it while I was driving. But is it unfair to say he's doing all this because he doesn't have to worry about pitching? I mean, I'm going to pull it up. So if you want to
think. So I'm just, yeah, I'm just, because we talked about this before, right? We talked about him coming back and being more of a closer in the playoffs. And when I was thinking about, anytime I think about Ohtani, I think about how it appears from what we hear, how obsessed he is with his routine, right? And that takes in a lot of his time, you know, making sure he gets in his bullpen, make sure he's throwing and doing all this stuff. Right now, he can't throw. Mm-hmm. He's got nothing to do but focus on hitting. And we all know he's a phenomenal hitter. But now he is so dialed in and he hasn't stopped. I think he's got 10 home runs and, like, I want to say 28 to 32 RBIs. Again, 25. This was some 25. So at some point, like, the trickiest thing with him is when he's right, he's dominant on the mound too.
Right.
So I don't think you're ever going to see him really truly just be a pitcher or a hitter. But right now, without having that stress,
the Dodgers really don't need him to be a pitcher. Like, so that's why I asked the question, like, is what are they going to do? I mean, you paid him all that money, so you're going to have to pitch him. Whether it's like we said, like you said in the preview, is he a closer? It's right now, who knows? I mean, he's got his, as of right now, he's hitting 364 with a 1.111 OPS. I mean, that's just, and again, it's only through 35 games, but people were talking about it as like, that's a career high for him if the season today. Will it stay like that? Who knows? I mean, but he's so dialed in, he might. I mean, he's got 52 hits, which I want to do the math. So 52 divided by 35 games, it's one hit, 1.4 hits per game he's played in.
Holy shit.
Say he plays in, what do we want to say, probably 145, just to be safe. He might play in more, but 145, he's looking at 215 hits, which would be a career high.
Yeah.
His career high right now is 160. So just think about that.
So that's an interesting, like, that's phenomenal, right? But didn't Ichiro have 300 hits in a season?
Yes.
Oh, so I now believe, just.
Was that his rookie year?
I don't know. Because what I'm doing is I'm thinking about, like,
Ichiro's
Ohtani's not known for all the hits, right? Ichiro's he's known for that.
Was 262 in 04.
Okay, so maybe no one's ever had 300 hits, and maybe I'm just overtired, but Ohtani's just dialed in. Regardless, doesn't matter what's going on, he's definitely one of these guys right this minute that it's him and his teammate at the top of the list, Mookie Betts, for the NL MVP right now. I don't think there's anyone else that's really close. Acuna's got over 30 runs scored. We talked about him before, and I know he'll heat up, but there's no one in the NL Central that's going to touch him. Unless De La Cruz stays on his pace, then he'll be in the conversation. But if the Reds don't make the playoffs, then that kind of is a notch down.
Right.
That lineup is dangerous, but they've got gaps still.
I mean, the only name that I think you could potentially put into a conversation right now based on the start they've had is Alec Bohm.
Yeah.
He's hitting 360, so he's, you know, just behind Ohtani. He's got 45 hits, so he's 7 hits behind Ohtani. Not up there in the home runs, but
no,
that is what it is. He's second in the National League in RBIs behind Marcelo Ozuna, who's the other another name that I would you could throw out there. Because I'm working on, it will come out tomorrow, my Red Sox Braves series preview, my favorite series, one of my favorite series of the year, because I grew up watching both teams. Ozuna leads the National League in home runs and RBIs. So that is another name that is quiet, going around quietly. Like, nobody's talking about the season Marcell Ozuna is having.
No.
But he didn't, I mean, I don't even know what he did in the series against the Dodgers. I barely watched much of it.
He's batting cleanup, right? Most of the time for them?
Right around there, either the 4-5 or 6 hole. Pulling it up now from yesterday's game, at least. Yesterday he hit 5th. Olsen's usually batting cleanup. And he went 2-for-4 with a run and an RBI home run yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then the other two games he went 0-for-4 and 0-for-4 with 3 strikeouts. So 0-for-8 with 3 strikeouts entering yesterday.
Yeah.
So that's another name to watch out for. I think that was the other note I had with this series is the Phillies took first place.
Yeah.
And with that, I mean, they swept the Giants. Well, they didn't sweep the Giants because I thought it was a sweep, but then I realized they played today. And did they complete the sweep? They sure did.
Yeah.
So it's another team to watch out for. You've mentioned it before I even did. I thought the Braves would run away with the East, but the Phillies took over first place, and they're right there. So I guess that leads into – we'll keep with the Dodgers trend, I guess, if you want to.
Yep.
Yoshinobu Yamamoto.
Hmm.
Now, I mentioned – I wrote an article before the season started, and it was – actually, it might have been after his first start.
Yeah.
It was either before the season or right after the first start. And I said, is he a bust? I didn't say he was. And again, I said this when I mentioned it on the last podcast. I didn't say he was, but I said, could he be, because his spring training numbers look terrible? And then you and I talked about it. It may have been on the podcast, but it was definitely at least on the side that it was kind of embarrassing that his first start in the major leagues was almost a home game for him.
Yeah.
And he got shelled. But so this point in the season, now this is where I crunched some numbers and I was intrigued by this. So to this point, he has started 7 games. He's 3-1 with a 2.91 ERA, a 1.08 WHIP, 42 strikeouts, 34 innings pitched. Now I crunched it even more, and this is where things are kind of interesting: an 11.1 K per nine, a 0.8 home run per nine, and a 2.1 walk per nine.
Yeah.
So then I was like, "Huh, I wonder what his numbers really are without that start." In Korea.
Yeah.
So starts. He's undefeated, 3-0. His ERA goes from 2.91 to 1.64. His WHIP drops almost a tenth, so 1.08 to 0.97. He has 2 less strikeouts so he only had 2 strikeouts in that start in South Korea. He pitched 1 inning in that game, so he's at 33 innings. So breaking down the numbers, he's got a 10.91 K per nine. A 1.91 walk per nine, so then walks are lower, and a 0.8 home run per nine. So the home run per nine is the same, because I don't think he gave up a home run in that game in Korea. So I'm going to take that back. I don't think he is a bust, and I think they got a pretty solid starter to go with Glasnow on their hands.
Yeah, and the scary thing is, as you mentioned, Paxton, who we saw last year in New England with the Red Sox, looked good while he pitched. They still have Walker Buehler, who I believe is coming back in the next 10 days, if not this week. And they still have Clayton Kershaw that they can slow play all they want.
I believe Buehler's back tonight.
Is he back tonight? Okay.
I believe so. I know I have him slated to pitch when we get to it later. He's pitching this weekend, but I believe I did that because he is facing the Marlins tonight.
Okay. Well, what a game to come back to.
Something to get a little confidence under your belt with that.
Jesus. Team. They don't have anything there, but that's another story.
We'll get to that. But the thing about Yamamoto, and I was going to lead in to Yamamoto with the other one, but Yamamoto may not even be the best rookie pitcher this year.
No.
And that's where I come in with a Shota Imanaga.
Yep.
Next guy, 6 starts. 5-0 with a 0.78 ERA, a 0.75 WHIP. When was the last time you saw an ERA and a WHIP that close together?
Unreal.
5 Ks, 34 2/3 innings, which translates to a 9.1 K per nine, one walk per nine and less than half a home run per nine.
Yeah.
So my issue with this, though, is the numbers are fantastic. But what happens when summer comes and the weather warms up?
You mean the wind changes? Because that's going to be the issue.
Well, also, he's going to be on the road a lot more.
Yeah. I feel like
Cubs have been home a lot to start the year. Maybe I'm wrong but does he start giving up more home runs? And that obviously changes. But for right now, wow, what a start. And I believe he gave up, was it his first home run of the season to the Red Sox that Friday he pitched at Fenway?
That would have been his first, I believe. Yes, going back, because the first few games he didn't, his first two starts, he didn't give up a run. So, yeah, I think it might be. The way he's pitching, though, and the one thing that impresses me about Shota, and again, this is a little biased because I pay more attention. I've watched more of his starts, and I haven't seen Yamamoto except for clips other than that first game, is he's having fun. Seeing him out there joking around, having fun, he reminds me an awful lot of Seiya Suzuki, the way they interact with the teammates together and just, you know, enjoying the game. But the biggest thing for him is he is really, he's only throwing in that 93, 94 mile an hour fastball range, but he's up, always up high in the zone. But once the weather changes, it heats up a little bit. Some of these pop flies that are kind of dying or the wind's blowing in, that'll be the true test to see if he can keep that home run rate down, because that's where I could see him getting in trouble, especially, you know, on the road in some, you know, in Cincinnati at that ballpark, even in Wrigley, if the wind's not blowing in and he gets up, that could be against the right team, could be dangerous for him. But as of right now, he's definitely by far, in my opinion, the best free agent pitcher signing and rookie right now pitcher at this point.
He, feeding off what you said about his attitude and everything he's got going on, his press conference was electric, where he said, he put the hat on and he said, "Hey, Chicago, what do you say? The Cubs are going to win today." Yeah. I mean, that tells you right there the kind of guy he is. And to go back to what I had said, his first home run he gave up was to the Marlins. It was Josh Bell's start before the Red Sox.
Bell.
So, and the final thing that I want to talk about from last week was the weirdest thing we might have seen on a baseball field in a long time. A two-hour delay for bees.
Yeah.
And the story of the guy... Have you heard the story?
Isn't that early, though, for bees? Or am I not knowing my bee facts?
I mean, it's Arizona. So, I mean, but the guy was at his son's Little League game.
Gets called.
He had to get called because he works for, I had it written down here, Sky Blue Pest Control.
So he came to
handle the bee issue. And he got to throw out the first pitch. And then they made him a Topps baseball card.
That's awesome.
The guy's name, the hero of the week, may as well, we could make that a segment, Matt Hilton.
I mean, 2 hour delay for bees. And there's been some strange ones, but there was a ton. I'm allergic, so have at it.
I mean, what was that? How do you not know?
That's not something that happens overnight. You know, right. that had been coming. And they just seemed, maybe were they, I mean, there's a lot to get into it. Maybe they were away for, you know, a 10-day stretch or whatever, but either way.
I mean, I know they were off, but like somebody's got to be there. Like, even if you show up and you just hang out, like you're like not hang out, but like somebody in ownership or somebody in like a GM or something like that. Like, we all see Moneyball.
Billy Bean sitting there watching the game from the stands his phone.
I don't get it. Like, you just show up like in 2 hours. So, like, you know, the players show up to the park and they're taking BP for an East Coast game at 7 o'clock. It's probably 3 o'clock, probably. They're taking BP 4 o'clock. So that's 3 hours, 4 hours before game time. How do you not know then?
Yeah.
Or we're delaying this game 2 hours. Or did they know and they just didn't know what to do?
Potentially. Maybe they thought they would have left when all the noise and everything, you know, get the people in there and stuff will move. But yeah, that's like, that was crazy to see that, and just not something you see every day. I mean, squirrel, cat, some other bird on the field, sure. A bird getting blown up by Randy Johnson. Yeah, we've seen it.
If you're in Oakland in the visitor press box, you got, what's it, raccoons or possums just living in there. You know, it is what it is, but.
Yeah, it's one of, this is some strange shit. But yeah, that was definitely interesting this week. And it was one of the strangest things by far this year, I would say. Not just this week.
Yeah. Well, that's all I got for what I saw this week.
All right. So for me, I dove in and it was kind of, the one thing I was thinking about was Jackson Holliday. And you've got the Baltimore Orioles who have been playing phenomenal baseball. They call him up. And normally when you see a top prospect come up, it's when the team actually needs a lift, a boost, some sort of energy. And he came up and struggled. No harm, no foul. The team continued to win. Gave him his first taste of major leagues. So I wanted to look to see what he's been doing since. And he's been with the Norfolk Tide. And as of right now, which I just actually deleted it, he's only hitting 200. Now, he's got four doubles, but he's only hitting 200 since coming back. Beforehand, I believe he was hitting 288. And I was just kind of really interested to see how he would do coming back. And I think you had mentioned that it was Tuesday of last week that he went three for six. So he got off to a slow start getting back. You know, obviously, I think it would probably a little bit of a culture shock or maybe an ego shock to him to go up and struggle the way he did with the Orioles. But again, he was so protected in regards to that team winning still. It wasn't on his shoulders to win the game. So I'm going to be monitoring Jackson Holliday over the next couple of weeks, and I want to pay attention to Norfolk Tide just to see if he really is starting to turn it around or if this is going to be a struggle that he deals with for a little bit longer after his first call-up. But again, the big thing for him is this isn't one of those times where the Orioles need to call him up because they need to boost in ticket sales or anything else. This was just simply giving a taste, sending him back down, and continuing to roll. And the biggest thing is he didn't have an impact negatively or positively on the team. So it'll be very interesting to see what he does moving forward. Hopefully he'll rebound and get back to what he was doing previously, you know, hitting the ball hard, hitting the ball out of the ballpark, which he hasn't done since going back to Norfolk. But it's something I'll watch. And
such a mental game.
Yep.
That him getting called up and struggling. Now, the way all the numbers, like it was talked about for so long. I forget how long he was up for. I want to say it was 3 weeks. It might have been longer. It might have been less. But I want to say I feel like it was 3 weeks. And I just felt like every night he was being talked about and what he was doing and how he wasn't succeeding. And that's such a mental thing that him getting sent down, that's in his head. You know, as a person who played, and again, I don't have all this money and I don't have all this nice stuff where I have a deal with Marucci and they give me a nice three or four bats and I'm good for the season. I would get hot. Like last season, perfect example, I started off red hot and then I shattered my bat. And it just became such a mental thing where I knew I broke my bat and I knew the bat I had, I wasn't hitting the ball with well. And I didn't have the money to go buy one. So I sat there and it affected my numbers. I mean, my average dipped from 3-something to 1-something over the course of like 6 games. And that's what baseball is it's just all mental. Like you don't feel comfortable. Something happens. Everything about it changes. Your plate approach changes. You know, I was swinging at pitches I wouldn't normally swing at, like everything. And so I'm not really worried about what he does. Especially, I mean, like you had said, we talked about it Tuesday, he went 3-for-6 with a double, an RBI, and 2 runs scored. So it's there. You just have to get that confidence back. And not for nothing, it's going to take, I don't think he gets it back this week. And if he does, that shows you the kind of hitter he can be. You know, that's if he's young. So it's going to take him some time to find that rhythm that gets him out of his slump. And, you know, he is the son of a former major league player. So he's used to I'm sure his dad's telling him, like, the crowd noise is going to come. You're going to go through stretches where you're bad. But he, as his own person, has to find what works for him to get him out of that. His dad could tell him all day long, you got to get used to it. But he's going to find what works for him. And I have no doubt, as the ball player he is and what he's done in his young career, that he will.
And that he's way too young to worry now.
There's a reason why he's the number one prospect in MLB.com, Baseball America, ITD. All of us have him there.
Yeah,
there's a reason for that. So I'm fully confident that he'll get back there and he'll be the hitter that we expect him to be.
So you mentioned his father, and that was the next kind of thing that I was going to talk about. Jackson is that it's not like a typical prospect that came up that doesn't, you know, may have had good bloodlines, but Matt Holliday as your dad is a different bloodline. You know, all-star, World Series champ. He's at the games every single game, down on the field, before, at batting practice, every single game. And you have to wonder if that pressure, and because you have to believe the comparisons are going on back and forth, being asked, you know, the questions by the reporters, you know, what do you think of this? You know, your dad did this here. What are you trying to live up to? That's a lot for a young kid at 18 who's had to live with it his whole career anyway. But it just made me think of, you know, the Bo Bichettes of the world, the Kevin Biggios, and the trifecta, Vlad Jr. in Toronto, and all three of them having professional dads and having their own storied careers. And you get this hype built up, and everyone right now thinks that Vladdy has, you know, isn't the superstar that he was. His numbers are just as good as anyone, but they've got this expectation of here, right? After one good year. And I hope that doesn't happen to Jackson, because otherwise a great career might be belittled because of everyone holds him up here, when reality, what he's doing is still a great career, but they don't think of it that way due to who his bloodline is. So Jackson will be fine. I'm interested to watch to see what happens. I do think we'll see him again up in Baltimore, just to rebuild that confidence again, and maybe he'll stick. But the kid's 18, 19 years old. He's, like you said, he's the number one rated prospect by everybody for a reason. So the next guy I was looking at, and kind of shocked me, but I thought about this earlier in the year when the Rockies played the Cubs, was Nolan Jones was this top outfielder, you know, young rookie, and he is having a bad start to the year. He's hit in 26 games and 94 at bats. He's got 11 runs scored, 16 hits, 5 doubles, 1 triple, 1 home run, and only 7 RBIs. He's got 9 walks and 37 strikeouts, 2 stolen bases. He's hitting 170. He's got an OPS of 520. Last year, he had 20 home runs, 22 doubles, 4 triples, 62 RBIs, 20 stolen bases, and hit for 297 with an OPS of 931. That's a ways off the mark. And for a team that was looking to be young and was really looking into the future, and Nolan Jones being a big part, as of right now, he's been a letdown so far this year. And that was kind of something that was a shock to me, because he's a big kid, talented kid, and I think he's starting to press. And you can see that with the number of strikeouts he's got right now.
Well, I also wonder if that has to do with the Rockies not being good. And I mean, they weren't good last year.
No.
But they've lost all of their pitching from last year. Like, Marquez hasn't pitched at all. And I think we talked about that. And so is it the aspect of he's trying to do too much? And I thought about it. I tried my hardest to find a way to try to find a loophole to something for him, where I did his home and away splits, and those weren't good.
No.
And I almost want to say, let's see what happens when it gets warmer. I just want to wait and see, and come the end of maybe even the middle of June. What's he like in the middle of June?
Yep. Now, it was just interesting to me, because he was also that gold glove caliber outfielder, and the first few games he's making several errors, bad plays, just misreading things, you know, just being kind of lackadaisical, having one go off the heel of his glove, you know, trying to charge in on a ball and let it go under his glove. So I think right now he's pressing, no doubt. And hopefully, like you said, once it starts to heat up, you know, maybe sit him a couple of games, get him back in the groove of things, because he is a talented player. My next thing was, we had talked about Luis Urias being traded. And I forget at this point in time who I'd even mentioned it to. Maybe it was for the Reds. No. Forget which. Maybe it was the Red Sox. I can't even remember which team, but I threw his name out there, and neither of us thought they'd give up at this point. Yeah, now he's a San Diego Padre.
Which is interesting, because what are they doing?
Wasn't sure what the hell they were doing with him there, but he's a guy that can hit, gets on base, doesn't hit for power, but maybe he can set the table for the rest of the guys out there. But it led me to wonder, what's the next shoe to drop in Miami? Do the White Sox start selling off? What about the Angels? The Angels are going to be without Trout for a long period of time. They're already dead, they're at the bottom of the division. Both teams, the White Sox, in my eyes, I looked at their roster today just to kind of see stats-wise of who's worth moving. There's nothing. Sox.
I saw something today about the White Sox, and I'm kind of intrigued by it. I don't. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying do it. I'm not saying I love it, but we talked for the last couple weeks, and you know I'm very high on this, with Andrew Bailey and the Red Sox.
Yep.
People have talked about, what if Michael Kopech comes back to the Red Sox and Andrew Bailey gets his hands on him?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the kind of thing that could fix him and save his career?
Where would you put him? Starter or bullpen?
I don't know, because I feel like you've almost Daniel Bardem now. Like, you've just messed with the guy's head so much. Like, when did he come up? He came up a starter, and the Sox trained him to be a starter. The White Sox had him as a starter. And then they move him to the bullpen now. And I just feel like it's a lot of emotion to keep messing with. They do it with Papelbon, too. It's another guy that they had as a starter, and they moved him, and he succeeded.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if I want him in the bullpen, because I'm okay with the bullpen the way it is. Especially, like, you get Kenley, and you're going to have Hendricks back by the deadline. And, again, I should have talked about them before, but they're a team, I can't believe it, with all the injuries they got. They're 19-16, I believe, or something like that.
Their pitching has been phenomenal.
And even the guys you don't expect, like Cooper Criswell and Winkowski, hasn't looked bad. I mean, the bullpen games kind of suck, but there's hope on the horizon. Bayo's back this weekend. Pavetta's back Wednesday. But I really think Jesus Luzardo, going back to your Marlins take, I think he's a guy that's going to be out there. And I think no matter what, they're trading Josh Bell and Tanner Scott as soon as they possibly can, because they're both free agents at the end of the year.
Jake Lamb as well, Jake Berger, sorry. Jake Berger, who was on the IL, but as soon as he gets back and hitting too, he's another one that could go. The other guy, I think Luzardo is one that you see him get, if he can prove in three starts and not have any setbacks, that's when teams, you'll start hearing rumors of so-and-so scouts. There's going to be some talk if he can come back, pitch, and show no signs of regression or have any setbacks. That's a guy to go. And the other one was Tanner Scott out of the bullpen. He was actually something I read or heard over the weekend that the Cubs were interested.
It's not a bad one.
No. The only other guy from really the White Sox, the Angels are just a mess, and I don't know what they do, or if they just stand pat and reset at the end of the season. Trout's going to be out. There's nothing really there that interests me. The White Sox have Benintendi. They have Pham, who again comes in, gets pulled up, veteran. Saw it last year with the Mets. They traded him off to the Diamondbacks. He's a veteran bat that can just play. He's consistent. He's going to, you know what to expect from him. So I think it'll be interesting to see how long before the Marlins continue to go and then the White Sox. And I think the surprise team that could be sellers sooner rather than later if things don't turn around are the St. Louis Cardinals.
Yes. I was another team I was thinking of.
What about Arenado to the Reds?
I don't think they're trading within the division. Because I also saw another one that I put away. I didn't even bother reading. Was Jazz Chisholm to the Phillies. And I went, they're not trading within the division. That's not happening. I think you have a better chance of Mike Trout going there in the offseason or the deadline to Philly. Now, could I see Jazz Chisholm going to an American League team? I don't know who. I mean, I'm trying to think off the top of my head right now.
About the Royals.
Yeah, they're still in it. I almost debated the Guardians.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Stephen Kwan went down today, well, May 5th with a hamstring. But, yeah, that would be an interesting fit there. But it's going to be interesting because some of these teams right now are in such bad shape and they're so far behind that there's going to be some moves to be made now, probably by the end of May, beginning of June, to get a head start before, you know, everyone else is out there. See if they can get a little bit more before the market gets flooded with some of these guys. But so my other thing, this was something I thought about the other day. If you're the GM and you're starting an expansion team, and you can take one of these guys to be your cornerstone first pick and you're building around, who would you pick? Ellie De La Cruz, Julio Rodriguez, CJ Abrams, Bobby Witt, Gunnar Henderson, or Corbin Carroll? Who would you take to start your team?
The two names I went to right away on that list were Gunnar Henderson and Bobby Witt.
Yep.
And I personally went Gunnar Henderson. I was 50-50, and then as I looked more into it, and it was the offensive and defensive wars that persuaded me to go Gunnar Henderson. And so with that, I wanted to say that Bobby Witt has a 7.8 war. Gunnar Henderson has a 9.5 war. Offensive war for Bobby Witt is a 10.1, whereas Gunnar Henderson's a 7.8. I can live with a 7.8 war. The defensive war for Bobby Witt is negative 0.4, whereas for Gunnar Henderson, it's defensively a 2.5. To me, that was what did it. As I want somebody, they say teams that win championships do it up the middle. Catcher, yep. Shortstop, center field, and then a pitcher. So I want to start with, if I'm going to build my team to win a championship, I want somebody who can play shortstop, which Gunnar Henderson is probably going to play third if Jackson Holliday does stick, whatever. But for right now, I believe he can play some shortstop. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, I want Gunnar Henderson as my shortstop to start my team, because he can do it with the bat and he can do it with the glove. And not saying Bobby Witt can't, but
some of the numbers, player,
I'll take the Gunnar Henderson over Bobby Witt in that aspect.
So I went the opposite. I had those two, and I went Bobby Witt, and I'm moving him to third base, which has been rumored, you know, maybe down the line in his career, because I do believe Gunnar's going to move there as well once Holliday's up. But Bobby Witt's bat, and he has nothing surrounding him other than Salvador Perez, who's been there for years. But if you put Bobby Witt on the Orioles roster – and you flipped them, what would their numbers look like? That to me is something like I think they're both phenomenal bats, but Bobby Witt's speed to me and what he can do, I went the different direction and I went with Bobby Witt. And again, like I said, moved him to third, but it was definitely a clear 1-2 between those two. I think preseason Julio Rodriguez would have been up there due to what he can do, just not what he's done so far this year. But I went Corbin Bobby Carroll. Witt.
I was debating Corbin Carroll.
Well, yeah, Corbin's done the same thing as Julio. Both have been kind of quiet to start the year, but very interesting kind of look. I know a lot of people are very high on what Abrams is doing and also De La Cruz right now in Cincinnati has been phenomenal, but I ended up going Witt and you end up going Henderson and both were our final two. So leading into, you know, wrapping this up, what's the series to watch this week or this weekend for you?
You want just one?
One or two?
I got, oh boy, I got a bunch for the week. Padres Cubs is one.
Yep.
Because we talked about before we came on, Justin Steele makes his return. Imanaga is also out there, and Dylan Cease. And also, you got Luis Arraez. I got Red Sox Braves because I love the pitching matchups in that series. Crawford and Lopez, the two guys with two of the lowest ERAs in all of baseball. And then you got Pivetta and Sale. I'll skip over this one because the pitching matchup had changed. I was going to do Blue Jays Phillies, but I thought it was going to be Berríos versus Wheeler and then Bassett versus Nola. It's actually going to be Sanchez going for the Phillies instead. So I'm going to pass over that one. I want to see the Astros and the Yankees in just the week because I want to see if the Astros are starting to figure some stuff out and see if they can flip the page. And Verlander's back in this series. See if they can get some revenge against the Yankees. And another one I'm going into for the week, before I get to the weekend, A's and Rangers. It's a four-game series. The A's are 8-2 in their last 10. Now you're facing a team in your division who is in the top two of the division. Is that success going to stay? And, I mean, they're getting, you know, they're going to face Heaney, Eovaldi, Lorenzen, and Dunning. They're going to counter with Wood, Stripling, Sears. No, Sears just went on the IL, so I don't know who's getting the third game, and then Blackburn. And Blackburn's been fantastic.
Yeah.
Fantastic. On the weekend, I'm going to go Dodgers-Padres because you get Luis Arraez added to that new rivalry. And the Padres are going to see Buehler, Glasnow, and Paxton.
Jesus.
And another two that I was interested in for the weekend. It's a weird weekend slate. I'm not.
Yeah, nothing really stood out.
Diamondbacks Orioles.
Yep.
I'm intrigued by that one just because I want to see Means back out there again. I believe he's got Saturday.
Yeah.
And then I want to see Gallen pitch on Sunday. He's going to face, I think, Kramer from what I've seen from basing the pitching matchups from what they've had for a schedule. The last one, going back to the A's. If they can do what they, if they can even come out of a split with the Rangers, you got the Mariners now and you're going to follow. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Sears is healthy. It's Joe Boyle who went on the injured list today. He was supposed to pitch the first game of that Mariners series. He won't. But then they're going to have Wood versus Castillo in the middle game and Stripling Hancock in the final. If the A's can end the week, what do we got, seven games? I'll say a game above 500 in those seven games. I might have to start wondering if the A's are actually really good. Actually, not really good, but a decent ball team, a ball club.
Yeah.
Since that Red Sox series, now everybody gave shit for the Red Sox for sweeping. Oh, you beat the A's. Congrats. You swept them.
Yeah.
The Yankees.
Not that bad.
The Orioles didn't sweep them. But I think I heard since then, I don't know, this was, I think from Thursday I heard this, that they are three games above 500 since that series with the Red Sox. Now, being 8-2 over your last 10, I'm going to guess they're more than three games over 500 since that series now. But so if they go 4-3 this week and the Rangers and against the Rangers and the Mariners, we could have some interesting conversations next week about the Oakland A's.
Yep. A couple series for me, and you touched on quite a few and that I'm interested in well. But getting back to the Cardinals, they play the Mets to start this week, and I'm very interested to see how they do against the Mets because that's a team, like I said, that back-to-back years not doing well. A lot of high-priced names out there that they've got to improve their farm system. Jordan Walker they sent down was just looking awful. You know, he was their top prospect, so it'll be very interesting to see. And right now they're losing 3-1 to the Mets.
I was just going to say that.
And then this weekend they play the Cardinals have where is it? They play the Brewers. So if you go in and lose a series to the Mets and you go in with no momentum against the Brewers, who currently lead the division by a slim margin in the Central, and don't win that series, you're already 15-19 going into play today. If you can't somehow figure out a way to get, you know, within a game of 500 after this week's games, it doesn't get any easier. The other one this weekend that I'm really interested in watching is the Giants and Reds. Just the pitching matchups that the Giants have to see what they do. A lot of ground ball pitchers. Hicks has looked phenomenal. I'll be very interested to see what the Reds can do against them because they just seem they should also have TJ Friedl back at some point this week. Maybe it'll be announced tomorrow that he's back. I know he was on a rehab assignment. That would be a huge boost to that lineup. But that's the other series other than the Dodgers Padres that you mentioned, the A's Mariners that has my interest. But that Reds team is I'm still not sure what to think. They have all the pieces. They're just not firing on all cylinders right now. And I can tell you right now, I mentioned this when he was signed, and I've mentioned it a couple other times to you, is the Jameer Candelero. I can't stand. I don't like that signing there. Obviously they went into the year looking a lot different with Marte at third, India somewhere either between DH, somewhere out in the outfield, and Matt McClain being in the infield with them, and CES playing first. I just don't see Candelario being a big piece to that team, and he hasn't done anything to speak of. It's been De La Cruz, it's been Steer, and India is hot and cold, but I just that's a very strange team. The pitching has not been that bad. They just aren't scoring many runs each game. They blow up for runs and then they disappear. So it'll be very interesting this weekend to see how they do against the Giants. So that was one series, you know, other than the Cardinals that I'm kind of paying attention to just because of what's going on in the Central right now.
Yep.
So with that said, before we kind of wrap up, I just want to kind of talk like we do each week. If you folks love baseball, want to talk baseball, want to join our team, kind of connect with us and write about your favorite team or team that you live in the area of, go to the website, insidethediamonds.com/join us, and just let us know. And we've got plenty of different openings. Even if someone's already covering a team, you know, we welcome multiple writers to deal with each team because there's plenty of things to cover and not everyone's free. This is not a full-time job for most. So just reach out to us. Let us know who you'd like to cover or any questions you have. Write in comments. Just, you know, go through socials to reach out to us, and we can fill you in on what we're looking for and what the requirements are and kind of see if it's something that matches your schedule. So go to the website and hit us up. We're covering anything to do with roster moves to series recaps, series previews, opinion pieces, and we're, you know, some of these teams we're doing down on the farms to tell you what the farm teams are doing and what their top prospects are doing. So there's plenty of different things to kind of build a writing resume for you, and also just kind of previous topics that we can share with you to kind of hit the ground running. So with that, CJ, that leads us into your favorite time, or at least my favorite time of the week, is the top 100 prospects, and who was your top performer this week? I should say performers, because you've yet to have narrowed down to one for each week, which is fine. There's plenty of them out there.
This week, I finally did it.
Oh, good.
So if you look at the bottom, actually, I've actually made this. That we
Yeah, can, I see that.
The link is there. May should be coming out. I know I said it would be Monday. I'm waiting to get some stuff ironed out, but we should have our top 100 coming out here shortly. I made the graphic for the updated top 10 the other day, and I actually wrote today something a little different besides my down on the farms. I also included an update for the top 10 prospects and what they've done this week. My goal with that is I'd like to do what I think I'm going to do one once a month with the new top 10 and see how they did. So if somebody slides in, like Max Clark just slid in with the graduation of Evan Carter, I think Wyatt Langford will graduate soon. Might be whenever there's a graduation in the top 10. And we'll do a check-in just so you can find out what the top 10 prospects are doing. So with that, let's get into who won the awards this week. My hitter of the week was from March, my 42nd ranked prospect, and that's catcher Harry Ford. He was also named hitter of the week for his respected league. He's a double-A prospect for the Seattle Mariners playing for the Arkansas Travelers. This week, he went 8 for 14 with a .571 batting average. 3 doubles, a home run, 4 RBIs, 5 runs scored, 5 walks, and 3 stolen bases. Now, just to give you an idea, this season he's hitting .261 with a .914 OPS. He has 4 home runs, 20 runs scored, 11 RBIs, and 7 stolen bases. Now, he's at Double A. I think the call to Triple A, I think actually he made the list last week, if I remember correctly.
He was one of the two. He did.
It might be time to start looking at a call to Triple A, because I don't remember who the Mariners catcher. Oh, they have Cal Raleigh. Or is he more of a DH for them?
Well, they have him and Garver, Mitch Garver. So Raleigh's been catching, Garver's been DHing, but Garver can catch too. So he is a little bit, I guess, jammed up, if you will, at that spot. But there's definitely room for him in the future. And I was looking at him as, you know, maybe moving up to their AAA team. But if he keeps that up and is getting on base at that clip, pretty tough to hold him back. Garver can play first base if they need to. So it'd be very interesting to see. And the other thing to me when looking and listening to his speed, and this is, I've seen clips of him, and this is just me thinking of the stats without putting eyes on him for several games, kind of reminds me of Craig Biggio. Super athletic, fast guy, can move. And if there is that log jam and Raleigh's really your catcher of the future, they do have a gap at second base in the future.
Yeah.
Saves his knees if he's running, saves his legs, gives you that other kind of dynamic. Again, this is all without me even putting eyes on him, but it is someone I want to pay a little closer attention to see, because he's a little guy too. If I'm not mistaken, I think he's just a little in stature. I don't think he's 6 feet. I want to say he's like 5'9". Actually,
they have another second baseman in their system, I believe. Hold on, I'm trying to pull up my images of my top 100, but there is another one.
I've got
Cole Young.
Cole
Young's a new one for them.
He's 5'10", 200 pounds. Sorry, my son had his baseball card out on the desk earlier, and I was looking at it before we started. But that was just, to me, when I heard you talk about him last week and then again this week, just the speed. You don't see a lot. I mean, Jason Kendall for the Pirates back in the day was a guy that could steal some bases, had the speed, and Biggio come to mind right off the top of my head when I'm thinking speed and comparison to size. Not saying that they'll move him, but oftentimes teams that have a pure athletic, and I don't know what he is defensively behind the plate, but if he's an athlete and you want to save his legs for the future and get more run out of him, there could be a move in the future, depending on what their game plan is within the organization for him.
Well, I almost wonder with Cole Young, is he your second baseman? And then we could have the conversation of what if, now having played catcher most of my life, the transition wasn't too bad. The idea of maybe third base. I played first base a lot more than the third base, but usually catcher to third base is an easier transition. And so because if you think about it, they got Polanco. So they have Polanco who can play second or short. Cole Young can play, I believe he can play second or short. Assuming I'm thinking of the right prospect. And then you have Harry Ford, who again, catcher, but you could move him. Third base is usually a better option for catchers.
Yeah, and I can't remember way back, but Biggio could have also been moved due to his arm strength. And again, without putting eyes on Henry Ford Harry Ford on the back. It doesn't say anything about his, actually it does say and his throwing arm is another plus tool. So who knows, maybe, but he is an athletic guy. And it's rare for me. The speed stats are what sticks out. Again, it's at Double A if that continues on through his path. But he's been very productive in the last 2 weeks.
So with that, we'll jump to the pitcher of the week. And I'm going Noble Meyer. He's at single A for the Miami Marlins, playing for the Jupiter Hammerheads. He's the 53rd overall ranked prospect from March. Again, we haven't updated, so he's jumped. But he got the start on Saturday, and he got the win. He went 5 innings, gave up 1 hit, didn't allow a run, walked 2, and struck out 9. His issue to start this season has been his walks, and in this start, he limited them. He has the 9 strikeouts in that one start was a career high. And on this season, he's 2-1 with a 4.26 ERA, a 1.47 whip, 19 strikeouts in 19 innings, and he's made 5 starts. The Marlins, and I think I said this a couple weeks ago when we talked about it, they are just a pitching factory at all times.
Yeah.
Everybody has that next man up mantra, and it's for any player for most teams. But then when it comes to the Marlins, it feels like they lose a pitcher and they just have one waiting in the wings. Last season, Yuri Perez was a big one coming up. And I actually think he made the jump from Double A. I think he got called up from Double A to make his MLB debut. But I mean, another one they have, like, I've looked at this nonstop, but I believe he is a pitcher. Well, one I know is a pitcher. The other one I'm pretty positive he's a pitcher. Max Meyer, who I have as my third Marlins prospect, is another one coming. And I'm pretty sure Thomas White is a pitcher as well. So it's just like they always have pitchers just waiting. And like I said, they have, we talked about Alcantara. Ooh, Thomas White, fun fact, from Raleigh, Massachusetts. He's a New England boy. He is also a pitcher. He's at Single A Jupiter. So it's another thing. It's just they just – Lizardo. I think that opens the door more for Lizardo to get moved. Because you got Alcantara coming back. You got Yuri Perez, who will be back next year. Braxton Garrett. Sixto's looked okay. I mean, he struggled, but he faced the Braves. So,
yeah.
They're just nothing but an arm factory. It reminds me of – it's the other team I will equate it to is the Rays. We talked about it. The Rays aren't as good this year because their arms are hurt. It's just a pitching factory. Now, they need bats.
Well, yeah.
So can you move those prospects? I mean, they're not in the race, so they're not going to flip your top three prospects for a bat. But can you move Lizardo and Garrett and get two bats or two prospect bats that are worth it and build a little future? I mean, think about what they did in 97 to win it all, or 03, Beckett, Miguel Cabrera, like all the prospects they had that came up. And Mike Lowell was a vet at that point, I believe, but all the things that they did to win those two World Series. So
you just mentioned it, all that you just mentioned, and I know we're just talking prospects, but to wrap it up for any Marlins fan that's listening, just because they start selling off this year and all these arms coming back next year, all they're doing right now is they're revamping so that when those arms come back and they have these extra resources, they have the offense, or they rebuild their farm system so that they can do what they've done in the past. And they've got the arms. It'll be very interesting. This isn't the White Sox you're talking about that are riddled with injuries of top guys. This Marlins team lacks some talent on the field, but their arms are phenomenal when they're healthy.
Yep.
And that, to me, is maybe the only reason why you kind of slow play or hold on to Lizardo, to have him, in the mix next year with Alan Contar coming back.
Well, and Yuri Perez.
I mean,
we talked about that Arias trade. I wanted to know if you saw the video before we get to wrapping this up. The funniest thing. So there was a video that went viral, and I forget who posted it, but with the Arias trade, the Marlins claimed 4 prospects. And in the video I saw, the guy was one of the prospects they acquired. He was standing on second base, and they had to pull him. He was confused why they were pulling him. He had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
Like, trade deadline season, they understand more so, like, it's coming. This was out of nowhere. And I saw the update on my phone. Was it Friday? I think it was Friday it came through, and it was my birthday. And so I had everybody here. I'm like, wait a minute. What's going on?
Yeah,
it was shocking. But the two players that they acquired, and I want to say it was the Padres Double A affiliate, but both guys packed up their stuff, and then they walked down the first baseline saying goodbye to everybody. And so I was like, there's no clubhouse at the stadium, but they have to walk down the foul line to get out of there.
Very well could be if they were they if they, especially if they're the visiting team.
They literally had their bags and their bats in their hand. They're saying bye to like the first base coach, the guy that was on first base. It was a very interesting sight watching it.
You don't see a lot of that in these trades. They don't ever show you that, but where it's so early and so rare in game like that, especially, you know, depending on the start time. But that was definitely a video that was interesting to me, because normally they'll show you the the videos from the minors where they're making the call up or going somewhere different. But yeah, that was a neat video and interesting, and raised a lot of questions in regards to what their accommodations are like inside the locker room and how they get in and out and moved around.
Yeah. Thought that was fascinating.
Yeah, it was interesting. There's so much about minor league baseball that I think that we don't even know. And I think we'd be surprised at some of the stories in regards to, you know, what their accommodations are like. They already moved them 6-game series to cut back on travel and cost, but still, these are small ballparks and they're not guaranteed from year to year. There's short contracts. So, you know, what they've got for accommodations are vastly different than what the pros deal with in the big leagues. So, great job with the prospects. I did read the top 10 article. I like looking at that stuff. Like I said, the biggest thing about doing this with you and joining ITD and doing the writing is I'm learning a little bit more about some of these other teams' prospects, paying attention to them, catching more minor league games, even if it is just a couple innings at a time than I would normally. So it's been a lot of fun. And just an update, Justin Steele did not do so hot in his first game back. That game's 6-2 right now, and going into the top of the seventh. The Padres are putting it to him right now, and I believe Steele is already out of the game. So welcome back, Justin. Do you have anything else that you'd like to add?
Not that I can think of. I'm just excited for the week of baseball. I'm excited to see what happens this week and what happens this weekend. Luis Arraez, by the way, 0-4 tonight. Yep. So after, you know, his first game, that was actually one thing I did have to say, my one takeaway that I forgot to mention. I believe it was a record. 4-for-4 was, he was the first Padres player ever to have a four-hit game in his first game with the team. So yeah, making his presence known right away, which is why I put that on my docket for the weekend with the Dodgers-Padres, his first taste of it. And they got their loaded bats, some good pitching. That'll be a hell of a series to watch. I'm surprised that's not Sunday Night Baseball, but can't do the Dodgers every game, I guess, right?
No, I guess not. I mean, you could, but might as well not. But Arraez playing DH, like you said, leading off for the Padres tonight. And the only guy that shocks me more than Ranger Suarez from the Phillies is Profar for the Padres. And I haven't mentioned him yet, but that'll be one next week that I'll touch on, that he's batting cleanup for those guys. He's got 2 RBIs tonight. So we'll touch on that next week. We appreciate everyone listening. Like, subscribe, reach out to us if you're interested in joining our group, talking baseball and just covering the team you love. So I appreciate everyone listening. CJ, thanks again. Been a lot of fun, and listen in next week.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy your week. Go right. Red Sox, go Tigers, go Cubs, go Reds. I don't know who else we want to say go to, but
go anyone but the Yankees, I think, at this point, right?
Go Orioles. I mean, even though they're an AL East team, but go Orioles.
Phillies are up 3 games.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Enjoy your week.
Thanks. Take care.